So, I'm going to start with a question, because we're going to be talking about consciousness today. And so the question is, and I'd like each of you to think about it and then give me an answer. If a tree falls in the woods, does it make a sound? Who wants to go first?
I vote yes.
Yes? Okay. You vote yes?
I vote yes.
I vote only if there's ears to hear it, because otherwise it's just a vibration.
I vote yes.
Any other opinions?
I'm assuming the forest is full of ears.
Well, yeah, like, what if there's squirrels in there?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Then yes.
Any other opinions? David, do you have an opinion?
I was going to say yeah until I heard Connie's answer. I think that it's the one.
Can we give a reasoning for our yeses?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Okay, so my reasoning for a yes is that it makes a sound because the universe is still always acting and existing and then doing, even if we aren't necessarily aware of it. So, like, it's still making that noise. It's still falling, even if a human being isn't there to hear it. And then it's kind of similar in the way I think of, like, scientific prayers, that the universe is always acting and bringing us what we're thinking about, even if we're not consciously directing it and then putting our intentions out there. So it's always still doing its thing.
Okay. Anybody else?
Well, it's all sound energy, so energy is energy, so like you said, even if you don't perceive it.
Yeah, it's still...
May I add to mine?
Yes, sir.
An addendum? That there's a lot of faith involved in an answer. This is a good place to acknowledge the faith in speculating that the sound is going to be within the range of human experience, so from about 7 cycles a second to about 13,000 cycles per second. That's what humans can hear. So the faith is that this wood of the tree is going to make a sound within that range. And then this sound is going to go through the whole atmosphere, influencing other ideas about sound, influencing other trees. Maybe it will be heard by humans or animals, and maybe not, but it's going to happen. And it's going to register through the crust of the earth. Maybe it, not enough to be measured, but a lot of these forces can't be measured by instruments. When you throw an object into the air, the object pulls on the earth. You can't measure it, but there's gravity. There's a relative thing happening there.
Like the butterfly beating its wings?
Yes.
Yeah.
Influencing weather.
Around the world. Yeah.
So the faith is an important idea in our answers.
I recently read a book called The Hidden Life of Trees, and I didn't know this before, but trees are very social creatures. And so I would imagine, you know, maybe they don't have ears, but certainly the death of one tree. Actually, it's not necessarily a death when a tree falls over, because plenty of us have seen, walked in the woods and seen trees that have fallen over, and there's still life associated with it. It just may not be growing itself. So it's a very good book, by the way.
Remember the author?
No, but I can look it up.
Okay, not important. I have the time.
Okay. Yeah, it was it was an excellent book. So, this book here that we've been going through this past year, Love and Law, is a collection of talks given early on in Holmes's teaching career. And I think the chapter we're working on today was written sometime between 1918 and 1920. So I think there were students that were doing the transcriptions. And this particular chapter has a lot of, there's some questions in it. And to be honest with you, one thought doesn't necessarily follow another. But that's okay. They're all good thoughts. So I'm going to start out with what he opened with, which is, what do we mean when we say the word God? And he also gets into Jesus Christ, but I won't go there today. Holmes said that we've taken away from the limits of God through a process of reasoning, which proves that God knows nothing outside itself. Well, if God is all there is, then there's nothing outside of it. And that every act that takes place is some act taking place in your mind, which is really interesting. So I read that, and I go, wow, I'm in for a wild ride on this chapter. So, but when you think about it, is there anything that happens outside my mind in my life? That's just a thought. So he goes on to talk about Christian Science, which says we do not have a material existence, just a spiritual existence. And for example, it's incorrect to say you have no heart, so you can't have any heart trouble. And what he says is correct in that there's but one heart, and that one heart beats in each one of us. So from there it gets a little deeper. He said there's schools of thought that say you have no heart and that there could be nothing the matter with your heart. Fortunately, Holmes clarified this by saying if you made a mark on a piece of paper and a million people walked by that piece of paper and saw the mark, it exists for them. But if you didn't see it, it doesn't exist for you. It doesn't, you know, it's not there. So, in short, he said, everything in reality exists as we perceive it, and it doesn't if it's not in our consciousness. And then from a more personal example, he talks about a little bit about memory loss and says it's impossible to lose memories, but often people don't seem to remember. And when someone says they've lost their memory, it simply means that the channel to those memories appears to have been stopped up, kind of like a drain or something. But the memories are all still there. And I got to see this firsthand with my grandmother, who had a stroke in 1975. And then I was told to go over and stay with her for a few days and try to get her to eat because she refused to go to the hospital, even though she'd fallen down a flight of stairs. And it was like a different person was there. And I managed to get her to eat because she'd kind of forgotten. And she lived another 10 years after that. But you could see her, you know, she had multiple strokes after that. And you could see her mind being shut off. She eventually lost the ability to speak English, and made it hard to communicate with her because she spoke a dialect of German. And I spent a lot of time with her. I was in Washington, living down here at the time, and my parents were flying me up every weekend once the decision was made to move her out of her house. She lived way out in the country in Connecticut, move her out of the house and into an anthroposophical community in New York State. And it was really interesting to watch her progression from there, because every time I'd drive up to Connecticut, I'd go through that community and stop in and see her. And you could see what they did was they kept moving her into smaller and smaller rooms, because it was like her once expansive mind was slowly closing down, and they, you know, she really needed to be in a smaller room. So I still had that sense that it was all still there in memory. It just wasn't, she wasn't able to access it. And the last time I went to see her, she couldn't speak at all. She just kind of lay there. And I told her how much I enjoyed being her granddaughter, thanked her for teaching me how to knit and how to cook, and told her how beautiful she was. And I watched her face light up, and I realized, A, she knew who I was, and she could remember all that. But, and so I was reaching to her with love. Mm-hmm. And that was a teaching moment for me, because it made me realize it was all still there. It's just that she was normally unable to access that information. So, getting back to Holmes, he talks a little bit about healing, and he says that disease is an image of thought held in the mind until it appears in the body. Wow. Isn't that interesting? So maybe we don't need our flu shots. And as you know, we're all practitioners, so when we give a treatment or a religious science prayer, we speak our word, and we know that the law is creative and receptive. And even, we don't need to lay our hands on a person. I like to lay my hands on people because a lot of times that soothes them enough that they calm down and they can change their thoughts. But that's not necessary. If the practitioner, and it could be the person themselves with the issue, if they both desire the healing and are afraid it won't happen, guess what happens? It doesn't happen. You're right. You're absolutely right. And then Holmes tells a story about how he once believed, and he was a New Englander from northern New England, he believed that money was hard to get, and he hung on to it. And many of us have that belief even today, and we're not all from New England. He would think that hard work was necessary, and it was really important to be frugal and hang on to every penny because it might be your last. But this simply isn't true. Those thoughts do not have to be part of our consciousness. We can spend money when we want to. There is plenty of money, plenty of opportunities, plenty of friends, plenty of business, and it's an abundant universe. And he says, anything else, and you're thinking falsely. That's good. I'm going out shopping after this. So when you do your treatments, feel you're treating whatever you're treating for, whether it's for health or for prosperity or for love. No, just have that sense, as Goddard teaches as well, Neville Goddard, it's already done. And that's the trick to an effective prayer. So the bigger our thoughts, the more we will manifest. Isn't that great? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So getting back to that thought I was talking about the mark on the piece of paper and how if you don't see it, it doesn't exist for you. Mm. What if we were that diligent with our own consciousness? So this is where I find when I'm preparing for a talk, my life starts to mirror the things that I'm about to talk about. And so my consciousness has been on lately on the workings of our government. And I realized, you know what, if I stopped listening to the news, maybe I'd feel a little calmer and more at ease, knowing that all is well. It's kind of hard when I'm staying with my dad in Connecticut because he reads 3 papers a day, and, you know, he wants to know. I get a lot of news alerts and things on my phone, and so we talk about the news all the time. But I've noticed since I've been back here, and I'm not as aware of the news, I feel a lot more relaxed. So what if none of that news existed for you? What if you didn't watch the news or listen to the news or read the paper? Would all the things that are going on in Congress and elsewhere in the government still exist? It's a question. Would the consciousness of issues in the way the branches of government work today, would any issues disappear if you're not conscious of them? If you knew that the government worked perfectly? It's just a thought I wanted to leave you with because it's definitely been on my mind lately. How much better my life could be if I didn't watch the news. So then, I always need to talk about a musician and how this relates, the metaphysical part of the talk relates to a musician. Jenny Lind. She was known as the Swedish Nightingale, and she was born on August 6th, which is today, but she was born in 1820. And she is known as one of the great performing talents of the the 19th century. And her talent was discovered by a maid who was listening to her sing to her cat. So anyhow, word got out, and soon Jenny was sent off to study in Stockholm. And her vocal range extended from the B below middle C, which is the middle note in the piano, to a high G above high C. So it was an enormous range. She was, I mean, we would call her a coloratura. The woman suffered from acute stage fright, and so what she did was she learned to adopt a persona when she got on stage, because she was out on the opera stages throughout Europe. She learned to project mastery, confidence, and all of that, although in her personal life, as I was able to read up on her, she wasn't really that way. And she began to travel all the way through Europe and met many of the famous musicians and composers of the time. It is said that she and Felix Mendelssohn had a thing going, but they can't prove it. And she is best known, aside from her remarkable vocal acrobatics, she was known for performing for charity. So she gave almost all the money she made away. And then she met P.T. Barnum. Have you ever heard of him?
Yes.
Yes. No. And no, you haven't? Oh, he was like a big circus guy.
Okay.
Yeah. And he convinced her to go to the United States in 1850. And he was a great showman, so he was able to bring in huge crowds. And she had what we would call today rock star fame. And she worked with him for about a year. I think she'd had enough after that. But what she did was she gave almost all that money away, the millions that she would have made, she gave it away to charity. I know. And then she, after that, she went out on her own, and she taught and eventually died in 1887 in London. And now how I tie this into the subject of today's talk, there are no recordings of her voice. So all we have is the word of others. We'll never know. Did she really have a wonderful voice, or did people like P.T. Barnum hype her up so much that we think she had a great voice? So that it just goes to show, you know, how something like that in the music world, she's a great performer, but with no evidence, we don't know that. We just have to take other people's word. So once you think about all of this, you go back and you go, well, did that tree really fall in the forest? And did it make a sound? Uh-oh, what are you doing? Getting your chainsaw out?
I didn't want to be so obvious. I was going to pull out the C flute to show you what the range was of her voice.
Oh, okay.
Would that be useful? I'll wait until you give me a cue to do that.
Okay, I'm going to do a little meditation. From
sure.
Holmes, and then you can maybe show us the range, her vocal range.
Whatever you say, I'm here for you. Do you want the bowl at all, or would that be another meditation?
That'll be another meditation. So close your eyes. That's right. Breathing evenly. Now we're at peace. We are at peace with all the universe of perfect life. Within and without, we feel this one perfect divine consciousness of being. I am, I am, I am. We recognize the law of mind, which is the activity of spirit within us, and supremely governing every activity of our life and manifesting into the expression of complete freedom, health of body, prosperity of circumstances, satisfaction, and peace to our soul. And so this word which we express, which is the presence and the power and the activity of almightiness through us, dissolves within us every concept of imperfection. Erase every belief in limitation, bondage, want, or lack. It uproots every idea of disease or pain or suffering or fear. And it frees us, liberating us into the great sweep of universal recognition, wherein I am that I am. So be it, and so it is.
So it is. Thank you, Judy.
You're welcome. Okay, Jill.
Thank you, Jill.